The following shiur is recorded, edited, and presented to you by Kol HaLashon. We wish you an enjoyable and meaningful time listening.
Start your day the Cheruway, Northwest London. Wednesday, 1st of April, 2020, Zayin Nissan, Toshin Pei. Rabbi Malcolm Hammond, alternative ideas and stories for Seder night. So, the purpose of this particular shiur is to present a range of different ideas to engage various age groups around the Seder night table, recognizing that Bizman Hazer, our children particularly, perhaps have a lesser attention span than we used to have. And the goal, of course, of Seder night is that they should emerge, not just with a magnificent experience, but essentially with the Yesodis Emunah captured for them in a memorable way. So let's begin with a story. The story is told of a stuntman who had come into a village. In the middle of the village square was set up the following structure. There'd be a large iron ball suspended on three steel girders. The stuntman would offer to lie under the iron ball and invite members of the audience to pull out the steel girders one by one. The slogans around advertising the performance read, "Pull if you dare." Well, the great day came when the performance was scheduled and there was a large crowd, and the stuntman lay under the three steel girders and invited members of the crowd to come forward. One person came forward and removed the first iron steel girder. The ball wobbled but didn't flinch. The second person came forward and removed the second steel girder. There was only one more steel girder between the stuntman and the iron ball. Were it to fall, it would mean that he would be crushed. Finally, a member of the audience was coaxed to come forward, knowing that were this to go wrong, it would mean certain death for the stuntman. I'm going to review the story briefly because the video went incorrectly. The story is told of the stuntman comes to a village, sets up a contraption in the village center where there is an iron ball suspended on three steel girders. His stunt is "Pull if you dare," inviting people to come forward and pull out the steel girders one by one whilst he lies underneath. He does that until it's only one steel girder left, and the stuntman, lying underneath, coaxes one member of the audience to come forward and remove the steel girder. He does so, and somehow or other, miraculously it seems, he is unharmed and unflinched because the ball doesn't fall and the iron ball remains suspended in midair. Clearly those steel girders were an illusion. They gave the impression of suspending the ball, but there must have been a power beyond that that kept the ball aloft. In many respects, this is the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. The Egyptians, the globe represents the world. The Egyptians thought they had control over everything, over their own destiny. And they relied on the Nile, they relied on magic, they relied on the Avodah Zarah. And one by one, HaKadosh Baruch Hu removes the steel girders, first attacking the Nile in the matter of Dam, and then demonstrating the fallacy of magic in the matter of Kinim, until ultimately, in Makas Bechoros, all of the idols of Mitzrayim crash to the ground as well, until they are forced to recognize that that which they relied on was a fallacy, it was an illusion, and Ein Un Mavado, there was a power beyond them. It would be interesting, Bizman Hazeh, in the current circumstances at the start of the Seder, to transpose this idea to contemporary events. What are the steel girders that we have been relying on in terms of our Western world? Perhaps the first one may represent technology. Man can reach the moon and has resolved all sorts of medical issues. Money in the Western world. We thought we could buy anything and buy our way through and buy our way out. Communication, social media, we would connect with anybody across the world. And yet, in the current pandemic, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has demonstrated one by one that none of these three items ultimately will give us control. We have to recognize there's a power beyond Ein Od Mavado, HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. So that would be a way to begin the Seder, link current circumstances, but absolutely rooted in Klal Yisrael's history in Yetzias Mitzrayim. I heard a beautiful vort last year from my chaver, Zohar Tugim Path in the name of the Shibari Pinchas. And it's a gematria. The Klal Yisrael were destined to be in Mitzrayim for 430 years, destined to be slaves for 430 years. In fact, the slavery was only 86 years. 86 as a fraction of 430 is a fifth. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu was moichel on four-fifths of the Shibud. The gematria of Kos is also 86. Therefore, we have the Arba Kosos to acknowledge that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was moichel on four-fifths of the Shibud. And that is, and therefore, with each Kos, we acknowledge that HaKadosh Baruch Hu relented on that fraction of the Shibud. Later on in the Haggadah, we quote the Pasuk, V'atal Sha'avosam Elo Elohim, that the cry of Klal Yisrael ascended to Hashem. The word Elohim, spelled properly with a Vav, is Gematria 86. Here it says, V'atal Sha'avosam El Ha Elohim, 5 times 86, as it were indicating that Klal Yisrael appealed and implored HaKadosh Baruch Hu to relent on the 5 lots of 86 that Midas Hadin had decreed. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu relents on 4 out of 5 lots for which we have the double kosos. Holach Ma'anya. This is a vort that I saw and I got it, I inherited from my grandfather, Zichron Levracha, based on the ideas of Rav Nachman of Breslau. Holach Ma'anya. For Rav Nachman, in this particular piece, the Lach Ma'anya, the ultimate symbol or level of impoverishment is when a person has an impoverishment of the mind. When a person is miyayish, when a person gives up, when a person feels they're unsuccessful or that they cannot connect with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, that's the ultimate impoverishment. The letter in Hebrew that represents impoverishment is the Dalet, the Dal. Well, if we have the letter Dal, which represents a poor man, the Dal needs an investment of Ruchnius. What is the letter that suggests the investment of high-octane Ruchnius? That, of course, is the letter Yud. Smallest letter in the Aleph base, and the letter that represents Minyan, represents Aseres HaDibros, represents the highest level in Ruchnius. So we need to bring the Yud together with the Dalet. Of course, when we introduce a Yud into a Dalet, the Dalet becomes a He, one of the letters of the Shemus of Hashem. Says from Nachman, this is alluded to in Ha Lach Ma'anya. The Lach Ma'anya is represented by the Ha, by the Hey Aleph. What does it need? It needs the introduction of the Yud to the Dalet. What's the next word in Ha Lach Ma'anya? Di Achol Avasana, which our ancestors ate. Di comprises Dalet and Yud. By introducing the Yud to the Dalet, we transform the Lach Ma'anya. And that transformation, the restoration of the Hay, is Toshuv Hay, or Teshuva. When we are able to restore our self-belief and restore our ability to take ownership of our destiny in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world, that is Teshuva. It's the restoration of the Dalet personality by the transformation to the Hay personality. Manish Tano. Beautiful story that I heard, actually originally B'Shem Rabbi Hul, from Manish Tana. It wasn't in reference to Manish Tana directly, but it's a beautiful introduction to Manish Tana. There was once a competition in the jungle amongst the animals as to which of the animal could roar the loudest and the roar would reach the furthest. Well, the hyena comes up first and gives its raucous laugh, and the laugh can be measured 3 or 4 miles down the road. And then the elephant steps up onto the podium and bellows with its full trunk extended. And the bellow can be heard 5 or 6 miles down the podium. Then everyone makes way respectfully for the king of the jungle, for the lion. The lion steps up to the podium and roars a lion's roar. And it can be heard 8, 9 miles away. It's assumed the competition is over when one small jungle bird comes forward and says, "Could I have a go?" They look at it with disdain. What could you do after the lion has done what it has done? But nonetheless, they give him space for that opportunity. The small bird comes forward and sings a bird song. Half a mile later, that bird song is responded to by another bird who echoes that bird song, and then another, 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 until it can be heard for 20, 30 miles. That is the essence of Maheshtana. We ask the youngest around the table. The youngest statistically represents that furthest extension into the future. We are trying to use Seydanite to transmit into the future. And for us, it's always been the cold and mamadata. It hasn't been the loud and the raucous that has ensured our transmission of Amasera. It has been the quiet and the consistent that has ensured our transmission of Amasera. Avotim Hayinu. Again, quoting from the Haggadah of Rav Nachman, so I've always been, I suppose, I've never been completely satisfied with the Tirutim I've heard to date, happy to hear more, on how Avodim Hayinu addresses Maheshtana. After all, Maheshtana asks four very specific and very detailed questions. Avodim Hayinu is a general paragraph that describes, in a potted summary, our history. How does it answer the questions? So in his Haggadah, Rav Nachman asks the same thing. Well, it's his question. And he says, in no uncertain terms, that it doesn't give the satisfactory answer. But then he says as follows. Says that, in fact, Avodim Hayinu is not designed specifically to answer the questions that have been raised. In Mishnah style, if you like. But Avodim Hayinu is designed to remind us of the ultimate Yesod, that is, that we were there. We were in Mitzrayim, we came out, we established a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Once that relationship is established, then it's true, we don't always have answers to life's questions. But we know that we have a relationship with the Borei Olam, and that there are answers to life's questions. Maybe not in our lifetime. Avodim Hayinu addresses this point. You don't need to have the specific answers once you've got the relationship and the foundation of it all. My late father, Zichron Livracha, whenever I used to discuss Hashkafa with him, whether as a young boy or as an adult, he would always give me the same answer. And I think it's a powerful point for say tonight. He would say to me, look, if you have established a relationship with a friend over many years, and then the friend does something that is enigmatic. You don't undermine the friendship. The trust you've built up through the friendship establishes that it's real. And you have to then relent, let go, relinquish those areas where we don't understand. So he used to say to me, so you don't understand that? It's okay, so you don't understand that. As a way of presenting this, by the way, this whole concept around the table, especially if there are teenagers, I would suggest that, first of all, there could be quite a discussion as to how Avodim Hayinu answers the questions. And secondly, it could be a challenge as to how we could capture the message of Avodim Hayinu in a strapline, in half a dozen words. What would it be? And give people a couple of minutes to come up with what would it be. And hopefully someone will come up with this idea that we were there, it was firsthand and forever. The Arba Bonim, the Tam, Ish Ba'al Le'yovet Es Zos. I saw a beautiful mashal in the Sefer of Rav Shimon Schwab on the Siddur. The back of that he has some comments on the Haggadah. Ish Ba'al Le'yovet Es Zos, the Tam asks Ma Zos. The same words. In Mizmor Shini Yom HaShabbos we say, Ish Ba'al Le'yovet Es Zos, that the person who is unlearned will not understand this. Mizmor Shini Yom HaShabbos talks about the theme of Tzadik V'ra'lo Rosh HaVatalo, and here in Maheshtana, where the Tam points to the same night table and says, Ma Zos. Rav Schwab points out there are over 62 mitzvahs that are connected with Karban Pesach, and the Tam points to one aspect of the whole Avoda and says, Ma Zos, what is this? Does that make sense? So the marshal he gives is if you were invited into the cockpit of an aeroplane, knowing nothing about aeronautics. And there is 100, 200 knobs over there and buttons and lights flashing. And you pick out one particular light that's flashing and you say to the pilot, Ma Zos, what is this? Well, he will look at you with a certain degree of disdain. You understand aeronautics, aerodynamics, engineering, all the other sciences that go into the creation of an aeroplane, that you're picking out one thing and expecting to understand from one thing in the whole context. Clearly, that's utterly out of context. And isn't a mature question. That's what it means in Mizmor Shini Yom HaShabbos, Ish Ba'ar Lo Yovet Es Zos. Eish ba'ar, a person who is unlearned, lo yovin es zos. He will not understand this one thing, and yet sees that as a reflection of the confusion of it all. Whereas, of course, that is naive and out of context. In the same way, in the Talmud, the Satanite picks up one aspect of our avoda and says, mazos. As Rav Schwab points out, of course we have to address him in his own terms. But at the same time, we have to recognize that that isn't a mature way of approaching a topic.
Kol Halashon.
Midchila. Maschil v'gnus m'sai mishvach. We know the maflegs in the Gemara, but where is the gnus in the Haggadah? And the question is, why do we need to be with the gnus in the first place? Whether it's midchila, or avodah zorah, or whether it's avodah mayinu, our physical servitude, the spiritual and physical. I think I may have quoted before, a comment I saw from the Maggid, the Koshnitz of Maggid. Well, why do we have Maschil B'Gnus and Haggadah at all? This is a celebratory evening. Wouldn't it be better simply to focus on the celebration? So, putting it in my words, but it's his idea, there are two types of people in life. Those that might be called the if-only and the only-ifs. There are those who languish in the world of if-only. If only I'd spent more time in yeshiva. If only I had studied, or if only I had taken different decisions. And the whole world, the whole life, is dwelling on the unchangeable past. As opposed to only if. Life is only giving you success. Matsliach, only if I take responsibility and take the right decisions now and I take ownership. The Haggadah reminds us that Klal Yisrael came from a place of degradation, and the Haggadah inspires us to be only if people, not if only people. Klal Yisrael didn't wallow in their past, but took ownership of their future. Rav Loester points out in this paragraph, Mitzvah, if you look at the last part of the paragraph, the constant word is HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the first person. Several times HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the first person, describing the history of Klal Yisrael and the development of Klal Yisrael. And this paragraph is setting an extremely important principle at this beginning juncture before we launch into the major part of Maggid. Namely, that I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, fashioned Klal Yisrael. I was the one who created you. I was the one who selected Yaakov, chose Yaakov over Esau. I. Here we're being told that we are created almost like the world, Yesh Me'ayin. We are inseparable from Hashem. As Rav Loester puts it very beautifully, we are not citizens of the world, we are ambassadors to the world. And our goal is its destiny. So here in this paragraph, HaKadosh Baruch Hu establishes that from here on, you are going to be, your destiny is going to be directed by my direct Hashkacha process. Here's a story that I heard last year from the great master storyteller, Rav Pesach Kron. And it's about a Talmud of the Square Rebbe. Square, I believe, was set up in 1954. And before those days, there was a Talmud who was going to live in an area of New York where there weren't many from Yidden. And he was worried. And he called the Square Rebbe expressing his concern. Square Rebbe reassured him, he'd bring up his family well. And every three months or so, this Talmud would call the Rebbe, get more advice, get more guidance, express his concerns, and then the calls stopped. So the Rebbe sent his Gaber, Shai Ungar, to investigate, to find out if this guy was okay. He went to see him, and the guy said to him, yeah, we're perfectly okay. We're fine, we've settled down now. I no longer feel such discomfort. We're fine where we are. Square Rebbe sent back the message, now I am worried about you. Now perhaps it's time to consider whether that's the right place. Kodesh Baruch Hu told Avram, Higeya Zarecha Be'ez Lelohem. And Avram's most concern was that they would become assimilated. Kodesh Baruch Hu reassured them, no, that they will always be reminded that they are the Ger. If we forget that we are in Golus, Golus reminds us. This is a story that could be used here or could be used in slightly later on when it describes how Klal Yisrael settled in Tzionim Ha'im Mitzrayim. But let's take Hashem. And by the way, although one wouldn't use all these stories on one night, the idea is to spread them, of course, over the two nights. But let's take Hashem and Akeh Abisenu and Yishma Hashem Eskeleinu. So we have mentioned previously, I think, but let's take Hashem and Akeh Abisenu. We call out HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the name of our forefathers. We were invoking protection. At that time, we didn't have the self-belief to think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would open the doors just for us. I must admit, I've forgotten the Makara for this, but it's such a beautiful touch. Vayishma Hashem es Koneinu, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu heard our voice, wanted to hear from us. This is an opportunity in the Haggadah to discuss Emunah and Bitochen, central ideas of Seder night, and certainly with our children around the table and teenagers to establish that they have clarity on the difference between Emunah and Bitochen, words that are used so frequently but not often clarified enough. Emunah, in a nutshell, Emunah, of course, is where it's belief in the mind. And Bitochen, trust, is where that translates into our everyday action. We demonstrate that our belief is for real by our actions in every day. So I came across a story in the Haggadah of Rabbi Biederman, not on this point, but elsewhere. And the story is about the angry chosid. The chosid who came to see his Rebbe and said he had an anger management issue. The Rebbe said to him, "Look, go outside into the waiting room for a few minutes. Let me see somebody else. And then come back in and we will discuss it." So the chosid goes outside into the waiting room and the next chosid comes in. And the Rebbe commissions the next chosid to test the patience of the previous one. And he says, "I want you to go out, I want you to see." He says he's got an anger management issue, see how it goes. So the man goes out, and he makes the guy a coffee, and he spills the coffee, and he trips over his shoes, and he says a couple of insensitive things, and throughout, the chosid remains completely calm. Completely calm. After a few minutes, the Rebbe calls in the third chosid. And he says to him, "You know, I heard you had an anger management issue, but I couldn't help overhearing what was going on in the waiting room. And in the waiting room, you were utterly calm despite all the various shenanigans. How did you do it?" So the chosid smiles a little bit sheepishly and says to Rebbe, "I confess, I heard you instruct the chosid." The Rebbe sits around him and says, "And I have a confession too. I wanted you to hear. You don't have a problem with anger. You have a problem with bitochen. As I believe the Maharal defines, anger is when there is a clash between the world as it is and the world that I expected it to be. I'm driving down the road, I expected the road to be free, and there's traffic. I get frustrated or irritated. That's what anger is. However, when we're able to be makabel, able to accept the world as it is supposed to be, there is hashkacha protis, then we don't get angry. We get angry when we think the instruction hasn't come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yours isn't a problem of anger. Yours is a problem of emunah and bitochen." Now, nitzak al Hashem lekev esinu. Here, Klal Yisrael exercise bitochen through tefillah and turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's at this moment of time that becomes the turning point from Shibud to Yetzias Mitzrayim. I also heard in a similar vein on the concept of bitochen, again from my chava, from Dr. Tugendhaft, in the name of Tina Halberstam, Baba Vareva. We say in Capital Lamed Beis, V'haboteach b'Hashem chesed yisev avenu. You really need a pen and paper for this, but the words V'haboteach, if you take the letters that surround those letters, so Vav is surrounded by a Hey and a Zayin, and a Dalet, Hey is surrounded by a Dalet, and a Vav, V'haboteach. And you add up the numerical value of the surround letters, it comes to 72. 72 is the gematria of chesed. V'aboteach b'Hashem, when you trust in Hashem, chesed, Yosef Avenu, will be surrounded by chesed. Makos. So here is an activity which might suit certain tables and engage especially the teenagers, but it's an activity which has got a very good message to it. That is, to give out a little file card on which there is, on the back of it, the description of a profession. For example, a doctor, or a pianist, or a window cleaner. The recipient of the card has to mime that profession, and the others around the table to watch. They don't know what the profession is. They guess what the profession is, and then to everyone to discuss the following question. What do you learn about this professional by observing him in his profession? So the pianist, you would learn that they're musical, that they're sensitive, that they understand harmonies, that they're hardworking, that they're disciplined, that they're trained, etc. The window cleaner, you would learn that they're not scared of heights, presumably. They're physically agile, they're dexterous, etc. Now ask everyone around the table, to project themselves back into Mitzrayim, and not as Mitzrayim, but as Klal Yisrael, observing HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kaviyocho in his professional capacity as the Bnei Olam during the Makkos. What did we learn about HaKadosh Baruch Hu by observing HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So here, and it would be an important discussion around the table, here we'd quote the Ramban at the beginning of the Sefer Dibros, who explains that we learned four things. We learned, of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu exists. There wasn't an Olam Kadmai. The world had a creator. We learned HaKadosh Baruch Hu that Hashkacha Pratis, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could differentiate between human being and human being. We learned that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is absolutely omnipotent, could do anything and everything. And we learned the Achdus of Hashem, the unity of Hashem. There was no power the Egyptians could invoke that could challenge HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is a very important discussion, of course, for the Makkos, because here these are the Yesodos of Emunah, which we are bringing out through mirroring that first-hand experience. Now, Baal Banel on the Makkos notes a variation on that theme. He says that Mitzrayim were kofa be'ika in three ways. They were kofa be'ika in the respect that they challenged the existence of Hashem. They were kofa be'ika, they said, if Hashem does exist, then maybe exists in the higher echelons, but not in the lower spheres down here. And the Makkos of Ikka in his omnipotence, his ability to do anything. When Paro, beginning of Perek Hay in Shemot, when Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Paro, he says to him, Kol Ma Hashem Elokei Yisrael Shalach Hasami. Kol Ma Hashem Elokei Yisrael Shalach Hasami. Three phrases. Kol Ma Hashem, Hashem exists. Elokei Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has Hashkach crosses. Shalach Hasami, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has control over every nation over the world, and he has chosen Klal Yisrael. So Moshe Rabbeinu came addressing these three areas of kefira of Paro. Paro responds, "Mi Hashem, who is Hashem? I challenge the truth of his existence. Lo yodati, I haven't heard of him, not come across him, not aware of him in any practical sense, challenging the Hashkacha process. And Gamish Yisrael, I'm not going to send that to Yisrael. I don't believe that the God that you are claiming has any claim over my slave nation." So the Makkos were therefore designed in the three groups that Yehuda identifies to challenge the heresy of Paro. First, the Makkos, Ki Ani Hashem, were designed initially to show that Hashem existed. Demonstrated through the first three Makkos, Makkos Dam, which attacked the God of the Nile. In Makkos Orev, in the second group, it says, Ani Hashem Kereva Oretz. Not only do I exist, but I have control over the upper spheres and the lower spheres. And then finally, Makkos Barod, I think it is, Ki Ein Kamoni. There is none like me across the universe. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is omnipotent and has absolute power and can direct all of our destinies. So the three groups of Makkos represent the three challenges or the three areas where Moshe Rabbeinu presented Hashem to Paro, where Paro denied. And ultimately, Paro was forced to capitulate. We finish off with Pesach Matzah Moror, the thought from the Haggadah of Rav Leuchter. Again, this is a good point in the Seder, which could really be a discussion point. And we say, you've got to say, of course, Ramadan Shosh the Ramelu, the Lo Yotzadeh Chavosu, a person who hasn't said these three things, has not been Yotzeh, he's been in Sippur. It would be more understandable if you hadn't been Yotzeh, you'd been in Avodah. But here it says you've been in Sippur. Clearly, these three things are critical to the Sippur itself. So what is it about these three things? In Pesach, I would ask the question for discussion, what do we learn about Makkos B'Cholos in this paragraph about Pesach that is unique to Makkos B'Cholos? There are several aspects that are unique, but one aspect that emerges here is that Klal Yisrael themselves were under threat. The only Makkah where all of Klal Yisrael were under threat, and Makkos Choshech. Choshech, of course, there were many of Klal Yisrael who died, but the Tzaddikim were not under threat. But in Makkos B'Cholos, everybody was under threat. Why were we under threat? So I've mostly explained because the presence of the Shekhinah was so all-pervading and so powerful that the human frame could not withstand it. It was like 10,000 volts. So how did we survive if that was the case? Because when we placed the dam on the mezuzahs, we identified with the HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we became inseparable from the makar of power itself. So Pesach teaches us that we are inseparable from the HaKadosh Baruch Hu and that is our life's mission. That's the first paragraph. Establishing our life's mission at the end of Seder, inseparable from Hashem, ambassadors of Hashem. Matzah, the theme is Chippozot. Chippozot teaches us that we may not always be prepared for the next stage in life, We must always be ready to respond to whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks for us. Prepared, not necessarily, but ready always. Ready to serve. And that is the history of Klal Yisrael. Ready to move on, ready to serve. So Pesach is mission. Matzah, if you like, is attitude. Ready to serve. What's moral? Because so often when we go through the trials and the difficulties of life, we can't identify how those actually enable our mission. Only when we look back with some kind of perspective do we see that the maror was part of the redemptive process itself. But, and that answers the question why maror comes after Pesach and Matzah. It seems out of sequence at the stage of the Seder. Pesach and Matzah is freedom, maror is slavery. But maror, at the end of it all, we look back, we review, we reflect, and we understand how the nisyonos that we were put through were part of ultimately that which triggered the redemption. May the current nisyonos trigger the redemption.
The shiur you've listened to was recorded and edited for you by Kol HaLashon. You're invited to continue listening at any time to all the shiurim and drushos in all topics by all the Rabbanim on Kol HaLashon.